Hey everyone, welcome back to But Why Though, the podcast, where we talk about the things in pop culture that people say matter, and we ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, we wanted to let you guys know that at the end of the month of August, we will be leaving SoundCloud, but you can still find us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, and YouTube, as well as a lot of your other podcasting apps. But if you have any concerns, feel free to email us at info@butwhythoughpodcast.com. Enjoy the show. This week, we're talking about a show that has been blessed by the old gods and the new. We're talking about Game of Thrones, guys. And as always, I'm your host, Kate, and I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And as always, we're going to get started with a few questions. First, what's your involvement with Game of Thrones? Did you read the books first? And do you have a favorite character or house? Matt, you go first.
First, I want to say I'm still having sinus problems, so I'm sorry for the sniffling and everything else.
Can I call you Snuffleupagus?
No, you cannot. But as far as Game of Thrones, involvement, I have none. I knew there were books. They're probably in a library, and that's about
it. They're probably in the other room on the bookshelf.
Oh, well, I did not actually know we own these books, so apparently we do own these. And unfortunately, I do not have a favorite character or house, but I want to say if I did have a favorite character, it would have to be Dinglebot. Or Peter Dinklage, only because
the Destiny. Tyrion.
Yes, only because of the Destiny reference. But basically this episode, I want to see if you two, excited and thrilled as you are, be able to convince me or tell me why this is worth watching.
I'm going to pick it up from there. So I love Game of Thrones. I haven't read all the books. I've read most of the books. But I left Game of Thrones right after season 5, episode 6, and I did not watch a single episode after that. However, in preparation for this episode, I binge-watched all of season 5 again, and all of season 6, and the first episode of season 7, and I can say I am effectively hyped. Very, very hyped to talk about it right now, and I have a lot of feelings, and I don't know how to process them, because so much happened in season 6, and it's probably the best one. So that's my involvement with it, and the books, and my favorite character. My favorite character who I respect is actually Cersei. I hate her, but I love the way she's played. I love the way she's written, and I like that everything she does has a reason, and she's very logical and methodical, and I really, really love that. But just on sheer badassness, I would have to go with Daenerys as my favorite. Actually, like, Daenerys or Arya. I have a hard time with my favorite characters, guys. They're so, like, it's hard for me. They're so good. Jon Snow is also pretty good. And so is Sir Davros. And Davos. So is
okay, Jorah. Now you're just listing all
and
the characters.
I'm going to, because they're all... that's my favorite thing about the show. The characters are really well written. So to choose a favorite's really hard. So, and then my house would have to probably be House Martell, just because of their house words, and I like what it stands for. Granted, the Dorne storyline was not my favorite.
Sorry, you're not alone. Most people didn't like it, so it's okay.
What about you, Adrian?
For me, I started watching Game of Thrones, like, season 2 was when I picked it up. So, like, I binge-watched the first season. And, like, I think this is pretty true for most people. I don't think most people have been watching from the beginning. I think they picked it up when the hype really got going. So, yeah, I picked it up from season 2 and just been watching every season since then. I don't like reading stuff first, really, and then watching it, because I just don't want stuff to be ruined for me, like, while I'm watching it. I rather, like, read later and get more background and then appreciate it more later. That's kind of how I've always been. So I've read all the books, but I did it after I watched most of the show, because at this point the show is pretty much past the books now, so going back and reading it gives you a little bit more background on some of the characters and stuff, and you kind of see, because I don't want to be one of those, like, snobby book readers. Not that book readers are snobby, but, you know, like, oh, I knew that was going to happen, and I don't want to be that guy. So, favorite character, I got to rock with Jon Snow, man. Jon Snow's my homie from day one. He's my day one. I've always loved Jon Snow. I've loved his character arc. Ghost is the best direwolf.
I was about to say, can I change my favorite character to the wolves? Even though I'm, like, insanely sad every time, like, one of them goes.
Yeah, Ghost is the best. And I like the Starks, man. Like, they're the Northrend members, man. I'll never forget season one Starks. Like, no matter how good all these other houses are or how bad they are, I'm still rocking with the Starks all the way.
So, interesting question to start this. You said you've watched it ever since. Are you one of the people that watch it later and binge it, or do you actually watch it every weekly?
No, I'm week to week. I'm always a week to week guy, unless it's like a Netflix show and it just like all goes there already. Just because I like the conversation that happens after each episode, like whether it be on social media or like on Reddit or whatever, I like to talk right after the shows happen. So I'm a week to week guy. Like, we have watch parties sometimes.
That's what I was about to say. Like, I've never done a watch party for anything but Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
There was a watch party every Sunday night. And it was awesome. Like, we made like direwolf bread and stuff like that. Like, it was super fun. You all have probably, if you listen to the show, I binge everything I can. Or if you follow me on Twitter, I'm constantly binging shows. And I like to sit down for six seasons, but this is the one show that in the past I watched week to week. And
yeah,
I've never
done
that before.
Yeah, I like it because no matter who you're watching with, everybody has different feels. Like,
yeah.
A lot of shows are pretty, you know, binary. Like, you follow the good guys, and if you don't like the good guys, you're kind of a jerk. But like, this just has so many different storylines that people can like be more excited for other things. And I think being around people who are excited for like the Sand Snakes makes me like, oh, okay. Sand Snakes are okay. Like, I see your point and why you like them and stuff, which is like how it worked when I was watching, you know, that season. So yeah, I love watch parties for Game of Thrones. Definitely not a binger, but yeah, it's super, super bingeable though. I will say that.
To start off, like, sure. I said, I just binged two seasons of it.
Yeah. So. Like, we had friends who came over and watched their first episode was The Mountain versus the Viper.
Oh,
it caused our friends to go, and like one of our friends specifically, she binged all the seasons in that week to watch it with us like that next Sunday. That's because awesome. She was so hooked. So like, it's a super bingeable show, and no matter where you pick it up, you're gonna be like, oh, what is this? So
yeah, I also think too, like, I think the reason it's both bingeable and you can watch and you have such a great conversation about it is all due to the depths of the characters and the fact that a lot of these characters, when they make their choices, you get the ramifications, you get them going through those ramifications. And not only that, you get to see their thought process behind making those choices. I would say that, like, there are obviously some pitfalls in it. Like, you can't be 100% on the game all the time, but I would say for like 95% of the time, like, you get to get a full thought process behind why somebody did something.
So saying all that, how about we get into
the actual
history of Game of Thrones.
I'm going to hand the
throne. Can you say throne?
Yeah. I was like, I'm gonna hand my iron throne yes. over to Adrian.
Da, 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 da. I love the intro. I need an intro song going into this. Here?
It will be
okay,
there.
Good. All right, sounds good.
I really thought that through. But yeah, so Adrian's sitting on the Iron Throne today. Go for it.
Yeah, so I'm going to do a super quick history because we usually go a little bit long on histories just because usually the topics we talk about are pretty, you know, lengthy, dating back until, you know, the 90s and the 80s and stuff. So I don't want to spend too much on the history because, one, either you know that this is based on books or you're an avid watcher of the show and you know what happened. So I don't want to bore you guys too much with that. And that being said as well, I'm going to try to keep it spoiler light for people like Matt who've never seen it. I want to get you excited to watch it, but we are going to talk about some stuff that happens. I mean, the show's been out since 2011, so there will be some spoilers in it, but it's not going to be, we're not going to talk about all seven seasons and tell you everything that happened. So Game of Thrones, the TV show, is what we're going to be focusing on mainly here in the podcast today, is an American fantasy drama television series created by David Benioff and I've both these names pronounced really weird, but basically it's an adaptation of A Song of Ice and Fire, which is a fantasy novel series by the great George R.R. Martin, and the show basically follows all of the books that he's written, and they work really closely with him for the start of it. So as far as like book adaptations go, it's pretty good to the story. There are some hiccups here and there, so that happens, but I think the stuff that they do change catches book readers off guard in a good way. So the premise of the series is that it's set in the fictional Seven Kingdoms of Westeros and the continent of Essos. The series chronicles the violent dynastic struggles among the realm's noble families for the Iron Throne, while other families fight for independence from it. So everyone wants... It's about the thrones. It's literally called the Game of Thrones because
if someone... When you play it, you either... You live or you die.
Yeah, and you're either in it or you're not. And it really takes place... You have all of these families vying for the Iron Throne or just independence from the tyranny that's been going on. So there's rebellions and there's like millennia of history that's thrown into the show. And you kind of gravitate towards certain houses depending on your preferences. Lots of intrigue. And it's all set in like a medieval period. But a lot of like the stuff that happens in it is realism. I think like the term is like medieval realism for the show. But you also get a little bit of magic. You get dragons. You get mammoths. You get undead giants. Things. Yeah, giants. Shout out 1-1. It's a lot set in this medieval realm.
How much is the magic and dragons actually involved? Obviously, you've seen everybody's promos and stuff with the dragons. We know it's kind of a big thing.
So
but as far as the magic part, I wasn't
sure. Yeah. So in the beginning of the show, not much at all, really. It's more about the Game of Thrones. But you have like these overarching prophecies and stuff. And there is definitely magic stuff north of the wall of this big, you know, of this world. And people who are further south don't really believe in any of it because they haven't seen it in so long. But the whole winter is coming thing is because magical stuff is coming over the wall. Yeah. And everyone's going to experience the magic stuff here pretty soon.
Yeah, because like north of the wall would pretty much be like, I'm going to...
Canada.
No, not Canada.
Magic Canada.
It's Magic Canada.
North of the... Yeah, yes. The Night's Watch is protecting Westeros from Magic Canadians.
Yeah, oh exactly. Yeah.
But no, it's essentially like... Think of like an old like Druid Celtic like Earth-based people who aren't considered a part of everything else. Like they've lived amongst themselves, so they're very connected to... the earth and very connected to what's around them. And there's definitely magic where they live, but you see where there's a lot of doubt in the old gods, in the new gods, in magic itself. And so what happens like with any political show, as things start getting bigger, religions and prophecies start getting more and more involved. And within that you get a lot of the magical elements that happen.
Basically like the people south who are like all fancy and high and mighty don't know anything about the magic stuff because the magic stuff isn't that far in depth in their culture. But if you're north, if you're out in Essos and you're like familiar with the many-faced god and like the Lord of Light and stuff, then you're much more apt to believe in like magic and stuff. So it's becoming to play more of a role now.
Are there any wizards? So I am a fan of wizards.
If they're wizards. I mean, awesome. There's wizards, there's maesters, there's priestesses.
Which actually, fun fact. A fun fact. Maester, it was actually a term in medieval times for a well-learned religious person.
Yeah.
Necromancers?
Yeah, basically.
Cool.
There's
they're like
in this show.
Yeah, they're like sprite type creatures that have powers to do things. Yeah. Essentially.
Yeah. The Lords of Light literally bring people back to life like over and over again. So yeah, it's. It's there. You'll get some wizards in there for you, Matt. You're a wizard, Matt.
I know. I have pictures to prove this.
So are you on board with the premise of the show? Can I proceed?
Oh, you Matt? Keep proceeding.
Sounds good. So the show itself was released in April 11th in 2011, and we are currently on the seventh season. By the time this comes out, we'll be just about halfway. There's only seven episodes in the seventh season. And there's one more season after this, and then that is it for the show Game of Thrones. There are some spinoffs planned, but it's not going to have the same writers and stuff, so we really don't know what they're doing with that really yet.
So is it going to be a 7A, 7B type thing, or is it going to be a 7-8?
I think it's just going to be 7-8, but I guess you can look at it as 7A, 7B, because it's like, I think like next episode or the next season has six episodes in it or something like that. So
because the standard has been 10 episodes for every season.
Yeah, and this one has seven. So what people are hoping it's doing, and it's kind of doing it so far, is it's cutting out some of the filler, which is just evident in any, you know, HBO show. And then just like funneling all of their massive amounts of money that they're able to dump into CGI and stuff. So It should be action-packed, what, last 13 episodes if you haven't seen season 7 yet. Ooh. So the way that the books go in translation to the show, just real quick for people who aren't familiar with, like, well, if I want to go read the books, like, where do I start and stuff? So season 1 is just about the first book, Game of Thrones. Season 2 is about a clash of kings and early parts of A Storm of Swords. Season 3 is mostly, it's like about like 2/3 about A Storm of Swords. Season 4 is the last third of Storm of Swords with a few parts of A Feast for a Crow and A Dance with Dragons. Season 5 is A Feast for Crows, A Dance with Dragons, and some of the newest book that he's working on, The Winds of Winter. And season 6 is original content from the writers of the show mixed with The Winds of Winter, A Feast of Crows, and Dance with Dragons. And then season 7 now is original content with Winds of Winter and the next book after that, which is A Dream of Springs, which haven't been released yet. So this season right now, there's stuff that hasn't happened in the books that is probably going to happen in the show. But for the most part, everyone's kind of like up in the air. The only one who really knows is probably the writers and George R.R. Martin. Everybody else is kind of like on a level playing field as it sits right now.
I mean, and I also think too, like, what I mean, I think it's a great adaptation from what I've read, but I also think it's different enough to be its own unique thing.
Definitely, for sure.
There's a lot missing, because obviously the show versus a, it's like a dang, like, Bible-sized book.
Yeah.
And all of them are. So it's a lot of information to actually translate into a show. So there's a lot missing, but then there's also a lot that gets made just for the show to fill in those gaps. It doesn't go either way. So, like, you would definitely benefit from reading the books to learn more about, like, your favorite characters, but, like, it's totally cool to just choose what are the other as well.
Yeah, most people I know who love the show and a lot of the fan, but why those that we got, that I'm going to talk about at the end, none of those people, most of those people aren't book readers. They just really, really love the show. Yeah. And I'm sure if they went back and read the books, or if you went and listened to the books on audiobooks, the narrator for the audiobooks is really, really good, you'll get a better appreciation for the show. At least I did when I went back and did it. For the reception, like I said before, in terms of like HBO TV shows or like big TV shows, like this wasn't an instant hit by any means. So season 1, they averaged 2.5 million viewers. And by the end of season 6, they were averaging 7.69 million viewers, which is a huge, huge jump across what, 6 seasons. And then a few of the episodes in season 6 are rated as some of like the best episodes ever. Specifically, Battle of the Bastards is just amazing. And then you have the season 7 premiere that happened 3 weeks ago by the time this releases, averaged 10 million viewers over cable alone, and then another 6 million with streaming with their HBO streaming services like HBO Go and HBO Now. So a total of 16 million people watched that premiere through those services. And that's like football numbers in terms of how many people were watching it at that time. And unfortunately, HBO Now isn't available all over the world. So like countries like Canada. So if you don't have HBO, you don't have access to HBO Now. So the only other thing you can do is pirate it. And the season premiere was pirated over 90 million times. Like, it had 90 million views worth, pirated views, which is insane. Like, that is a lot of people pirating one episode of a show.
Doesn't it have like the highest numbers for pirated?
Yeah, content? Yeah. I didn't look into them for this, but it's definitely one of the most, if not the most, pirated show ever. So
it's also just become like a really big cultural touchstone.
Yeah, like, definitely. It's widely popular, like out of control. From 2.5 million viewers in your first season to 10 million. I think the last episode, season 2, while we're recording this episode, I think had 9.7 million or so. So even the drop-off hasn't even been that bad for people who like to wait a little bit to watch the show. So
during these first 6 seasons with these numbers, is the torrent, I guess the pirating views and torrent stuff, those are extremely high as well, correct?
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty high all around.
Pirating this day. Find it fascinating.
Yeah, some of it is just people not having cable anymore, and then a lot of it is just not having access to HBO Now. Like, if you're in Canada and you don't have HBO Now and you don't want to pay for cable, what other option do you have other than torrenting it online?
I wanted to do a Game of Thrones episode. Adrian's been pushing for Game of Thrones episode since like the podcast started. And I know it's important, but I was kind of really put off of this show after season 5. And I was like, I'm never going to go out back and watch it. And then it was like, I think the announcement like a week ago came out that HBO was partnering with Hulu and you can add HBO Now into your Hulu package. And then I was like, oh, a free month. I'm going to watch all of it. And I watched all of it. All because it was available on the streaming service.
There are plenty of people that do that. They literally just buy HBO Now for, or use either the free month or buy it for like a month or two and binge every single thing they can and then cancel it.
Yep. As long as you're watching it, I don't care how people watch it. As long as they're watching it and they're in on the conversation, because we're going to talk about for the next like 40, 45 minutes that we have just about the importance, like what's great about the show itself. And hopefully we can talk about like the cultural, we'll talk about the cultural significance of the show, obviously, but hopefully we can start some good conversation about, you know, why you should be watching it and then just why people still watch it. Like why 10 million people watch it on HBO day one for season 7 premiere.
Well, let's get into those, but why those then?
Sounds good. Matt, before we get any started, do you have any burning questions or do you want to just go as we
I'm
go
rolling
along
with the flow here?
Sounds good. Okay, so
you're rolling my with the flow.
Are you making fun of my wordage?
So this is my favorite show on TV like right now, and definitely one of my favorite shows like ever. And I think one of the reasons why it's so great, outside of it just having stuff that I like fantasy and dragons and stuff, is I really do think it takes the best parts of some of the biggest TV shows that are out right now and incorporates them into the show itself. So when people ask me like, oh, would I like Game of Thrones? And I ask them a series of questions like, do you like House of Cards? Do you like Vikings? Do you like The Walking Dead? Do you like Supernatural? And if they say yes to any of those, there's probably elements of this show that they care about. So like, if you like political drama and you don't care about like violence and stuff, like there's that in there. The show is called Game of Thrones because it's a game for the throne. So you have political intrigue, posturing, backstabbing, you know, people good at the game, people terrible at the game, people who you think are definitely going to win at the game, who don't win at the game. So it's definitely a political show. I think at its core, a political show, and all the other stuff is extra. So if you like Vikings or like Black Sails,
Outlander,
yeah, shows like
which
that
actually, like, these shows didn't all these come out like after the success of Game of Thrones?
I think so. I think Outlander was, I think my parents watched Outlander because of Game of Thrones, so like there's definitely a connection there. You have like the medieval kind of sword and board era, you have castles, you have primitive people, and you have everything that comes with it. The Walking Dead, to the extent of that, there's like actual Walking Dead in the show. But you also have like the high stakesness. Is that a word? High stakesness?
Yeah. High stakes.
The high stakes of Walking Dead, where like your favorite characters can basically die at any point, which is like, I guess, isn't super true anymore. There's a lot of plot armor in The Walking Dead now. But like all through Game of Thrones, like if you like someone, don't get too attached because they can definitely die
at any point. Rewatching it, I realized that it has still stuck with me because every time somebody was talking with an open background, I was expecting somebody like come up and cut off their head or like an arrow to come out of nowhere. Because I'm like, everybody, like, I can't grow attached, and then I grow attached, and then I cry, and that's what happens.
Did they turn into The Walking Dead where they started doing the whole like we need to leave everything on suspense for each episode and season at all?
No, not really. I mean, like, it's not suspense where you're like, oh, well, why didn't you just show me who died? It's more like, hey, this is what's going to happen next season.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
Here are the dragons. Let's go.
Yeah, like they have hard stops. Like they do really good of like building you up to a climax and then stopping. Like you have what happens. It puts a nice cap on the stories that you learned, but it sets up everything for the next season, but not in like the annoying where they're like messing around with you every episode.
Yeah, they have pretty solid season finales, I would say.
Oh, that's really great.
Because, I mean, at least in my opinion, like episode 9 or 8 is kind of like the big kind of climax. And then episode 10 is usually like, this is what we're going to be doing next season. So we're not going to like cliffhanger you too much because you kind of already got the cliffhangers in the episodes before that.
They take great care in like crafting the seasons to tell all these stories in one thing, which can be really hard because some episodes your favorite character won't pop up. They got to make sure you're still pulled in. One thing that I realized, and which is why I'm really happy I came back and watched it, was because I finally finished season 6, is stepping away. If I look at it as a whole, it's pretty much that thing. Like, it's pretty much the exact same ebb and flow of a season, but set up over the entire series arc, which I'm pretty surprised by. And it makes some of the stuff that I didn't like more bearable now, because like, I see how it fits into the larger picture of what the show is planning out to be, which shows a lot of forethought and really great writing.
Yeah. And I think that kind of goes to my next point about how it's kind of like The Walking Dead, is that it's a successful adaptation of written material. Like, even though like this isn't its own property, it does it so well that it gives homage to the series that George R.R. Martin created. But like you said earlier, Kate, like it's on its own plane. And that's a great thing if you like to read stuff and then go watch it like people do with The Walking Dead. And this last one I threw in there because I know Kate likes Supernatural.
I don't like Supernatural.
Well, Kate loves Supernatural. Is you have like there's this whole magic and religion and beasts and all this other stuff.
And family. And family,
yeah. That you get in Supernatural. So if you're a fan of Supernatural, you're probably a fan of Game of Thrones. Like one of my friends, her favorite shows are Supernatural and Game of Thrones. I think for like a lot of like the same reasons. So you do have a lot of that. Matt, do you like any of those shows?
When I read this list, I kind of start to laugh because I've seen maybe the first about three seasons of Supernatural, and then I've watched in maybe five episodes of House of Cards, and that is it for all four of those shows.
You're slacking. You're anomaly it's in Twitch. Pop culture.
Twitch.
I could probably blame Twitch. I'm not a fan of zombies, so I don't really care about Walking Dead per se, and then kind of what they've done. I don't really care with the whole, like, everything's so dramatic cliffhanger type thing. Supernatural, I actually enjoyed when I watch it. I just kind of time life.
Yeah.
We're still behind on Arrowverse.
Yeah, and then
House we're not getting started on that.
Yeah. we will catch up eventually. House of Cards didn't seem too bad, but I'm just not a big person into political dramas. I've just never really cared about the political dramas.
Yeah, so. I think what they do well here is that they balance a lot of that. So I would say, like, they make like every political motive you see everything that, or every political move you see all the fallout from that happen. So you see everything that's associated with it. So it's not just politics. It's how does this work into a larger story? How does this work into people attacking each other? How does this go into assassination? How does this go into like why this person's running? Like it's a lot deeper than just politics, but the politics are a really great part of it too.
Yeah, because you don't know who, and this kind of goes into the next, but why those, the storytelling and the characters in the show are just like amazing. A lot of this is due to just the characters that George R.R. Martin thought of in his own head, basically, and like the forethought he does through the books. But I think it's another thing to bring that to life in a, 10 season TV show, because it can be really easy to take like George R.R. Martin's books like verbatim and like do the whole story, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it just be like really bogged down with just background story that you don't care about and stuff. And I think the showrunners do a great job of cutting some of that stuff out and like giving people who are involved in the show, like you're in charge of writing, like, Arya's character, you're in charge of like doing and this stuff. So they do it in a way that it really, I think it brings out the best parts of the books without having to do all of like the boring history stuff that George R.R. Martin goes into that you might not find interesting if you don't care about that kind of stuff.
And I think it's really important to point out too, is like the characters are different, like in and of themselves, even if they had to age the characters because a lot of what they do, they couldn't put on TV. Like the Stark children are really Stark children in the books.
Daenerys, like everybody is like children in the books.
He's like a preteen in the books. Like,
yeah.
Like they are all at really young ages. Obviously that even HBO is not going to put that on there. So like the fact that they have to age the children, they also have to age their stories with them, but they still have to have it be reflective. Like that's a hard task. It's not easy. Like you're not just copy and pasting it over. Like you actually have to think out like how an 11-year-old mind thinks about what is happening at this moment isn't going to be how this, this 16-year-old is now thinking about it, or this 20-year-old. So that's like a really great thing there.
I think it's also cool because, I mean, you see it all the time in these movies that people try to take like the book adaptation and turn into a movie, and there's quite a few of them that actually fail.
Yeah.
And so the fact that this one not only...
Divergent.
Yeah, not only has this been successful, but it's been like an actual TV series, not just like a 3-hour movie or something.
Yeah. I honestly think that if you're going to adapt books into something, they should be television shows just because there's a lot of information in books, and we're putting them into a movie is, I think it is a disservice to the fans. I mean, movies are great. Yeah. I love them. But I think we're at the stage where we get bingeable television. So Netflix, go buy up all the book rights and give us like long ass seasons.
And I think the success of it, like they could have easily, I mean, I don't know how long they're going to wait, like they would wait, but like they could have easily, like if the show wasn't as popular, they could have taken a break and waited for George R. R. Martin to finish like Winds of Winter and A Dream of Springs. But they just kept going because the show was so popular. And its popularity increases every season. So you're getting book readers to be okay with what's going on in the show, even if it's different from what's happening in the books, because book readers don't like stuff changed in their adaptations
at all. Every time we go watch something that's based off a book, because I like to read the books before, I'm kind of like, that's different. But I'm also not the book reader that's like, it's different, I'm not going to like it. I'm just more like, okay.
Yeah. You know, comic book readers... novel That's readers yeah so like if they change stuff and you don't like it, you're like, you're not gonna like the rest of it. But they've done such a good job of adapting it that they're past the book part of the books and people are still tuning in to watch it. Another great thing about the storytelling is that they're really not afraid to like kill characters. I think a lot of the times in a lot of the TV shows that we like things like an Arrowverse and things like that, you know, no one's going to kill Barry Allen. Like it's about Barry Allen, but this show will kill people you love and not care.
They will kill the main character for the season.
Yeah. George R. R. Martin is a sick man. And literally the person you're rooting for all season will probably die at the end of the season. It's a very strong possibility. And it's just, it's intriguing that way. Like,
and the best part is too, it's not like your villain isn't assured to die either.
Yeah. And I think you don't know who's good. I think one of the, you know, just to skip ahead just a little bit, like one of like the best things about this show and some of the fan, but why those kind of harken back to this is that you don't know who to root for some of the time. Like not everybody loves House Stark, and like Stark's Matt for, just for you is like, they're kind of like the noble, I can't remember like the chaotic good stuff, like off the top of my head, but like they are like, yeah, like they're like the lawful good characters in the show. And some people don't like them because they do stuff that's too good and like they're stupid. Some people like the Tyrells. Some people like the Lannisters, even though like the Lannisters are like the bad guys of the show.
Well, like I just said, like I totally get why people hate Cersei. But yeah. I also know that, like, I like her as a character, and I respect the hell out of her because
I know a lot of people who like her. Ooh. Yeah.
Like, I don't think there is. Well, maybe Ramsay. I think like Ramsay might be the only evil character.
Yeah, I think like out of the show, I think there's like only two, maybe three characters that you're like, if you like them, you're kind of a jerk. Like Joffrey, Ramsay, and Walder Frey. To some extent, like if you like any of those characters, you're probably not a good person. But you know, Cersei, even though all the bad stuff she does, people still like Cersei. The High Sparrow, no matter all the bad stuff he does, like people still like the High Sparrow. So like, there's definitely dichotomies there that you don't really find. Like, and to kind of harken back, like to The Walking Dead. Like The Walking Dead, you follow like this group of characters, and you're supposed to think everything that they do is right, and they are right all the time, and everybody else is bad.
Yeah.
But this show does a really good job of like people who you think are good might be kind of jerks and things like that. So the way that they do the characters that way is really good.
Yeah, that's when I was kind of reading about trying to, you know, at least so I didn't come in here completely blind. And from what I've heard over the seasons, is why it's almost like they make the, you know, the not straight good guys versus not straight bad guys, and the more complexity to each character, to where you may be a good person, but you have to either make bad decisions or you feel you make a real, you know, I guess an irrational decision at some time.
Yeah. Or you just keep making good decisions and everybody that you're with dies.
Yeah.
Like it kind of makes you realize that morality isn't black and white. And entire thing moves within gray, and you have to figure out where to go in that part.
It's the realism aspect of the show. Like not everybody who does good is going to get seats of power, and not everybody who's bad is going to get their comeuppance. Like sometimes like they just have the power, and you have to kind of, and characters in the show have to deal with that. To move on to some stuff I know Kate really wants to talk about, and it's a little bit heavier for the show, is that they don't shy away from taboo things in the terms of like what a TV show was supposed to do. They did age the characters, which is great, because there are, you know, rape scenes with in George R. R. Martin's book with characters who are like 13, mainly Daenerys and stuff like that. Yeah, and stuff. So they did do that, but they still aren't afraid to do, you know, things like rape and body mutilation and child death and things that are like progressive that maybe wouldn't be progressive like in that time period. Like if you think about like medieval times, you don't think about interracial couples. You don't think about same-sex relationships, bisexual relationships. So they do a little bit of everything. Not all of it's good. And I think Kate can attest to that. But some of the stuff they do is taboo. taboo is kind of progressive in a lot of ways.
Yeah. No, I think – so I think on the interracial relationships things, I don't really think there's too much of that.
Well, if you look at Dorne and like basically like anybody in
Essos, the great thing that's really cool, and Adrian and I had talked about this earlier in the day because I've been like messaging in the group in our group tags like, oh my god, this is happening on the show, I can't believe this. But the great thing is you have to explore a lot of these things like interracial relationships, same sex relationships, gender fluidity, all those types of things. You have it as being representative of different cultures of the realm. Because it's kind of really representative of what happens in real life. In one place, something is accepted, in another place, it's not. So, if you take Oberyn and Ilaria Martell, she's his paramour, not his wife. They have an open relationship. They're pansexual for the most part. Like they don't have they just see people as people with no gender assigned, and they just love them and have sex with them. And in Dorne, that's perfectly fine. But when they come over to King's Landing, it's completely like, you don't do that. Like, this is not accepted here. And so the fact that they explore...
Unless you're brother and sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the Northerners and like the Savage Wildlings, like John.
Oh, yeah.
John gets it on with some wildlings. And like,
well, even
that's not a thing that the people in the North give a shit about. Like, they don't like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think on top of that too, the wildling women fight right along the side of the wildling men, and there's no differentiation. Like everybody learns to fight up there because obviously you kind of have to. What I really like about handling these types of things is it's always situated within the cultural context within the show. What I don't like is there's a lot of sexual violence. There are a couple instances where it was just really badly done. Specifically, there's a rape that happens. And I'm not, I guess I would qualify this as a spoiler because it's kind of a turning point in this character's arc, right? This would be a spoiler.
Yeah. You just say who the character is. You don't have to say who it's between, because I think that reveals a little bit too much about
the thing. Yeah. So Sansa's raped, and instead of it being about her in that moment and immediately after the last two episodes where she's processing it, she's having to comfort another person who is supposedly also really hurt by her rape, but it's like it was her and that happened to her, which I thought was really badly handled. That being said, the sexual violence isn't, as much as they do fridge some women characters, and when I say fridge, it's the idea of hurting a female character to propel a male character to do something. They do dish out sexual violence to all of the characters in the show. That is always one of the number one threats that people make towards other characters, and it's not just the female characters that are being threatened with this.
The characters that she's talking about, Matt, just for you, that dude doesn't have a wiener because the guy got tortured and got his wiener chopped off. No one is safe in this show. There's sexual violence against everybody.
And I think for me, it was just... because, and I guess my own perspective of seeing when somebody wants to write a complicated female character, they rape her. That's usually what happens. That's the trope. This is how we're going to complicate her, and this is usually how she's going to become a badass. And for me, using sexual violence when you've done so much with other things, this also reflects in the book. This is also my gripe with the books as well. It isn't just the show. I realize that this happens in both places. It's kind of easy. It's the easy way. And it's kind of sloppy, but I do think that they have done a really good job after they've received some criticism. Not George R. R. Martin, but the actual showrunners. George R. R. Martin doesn't believe anything needs to be criticized. But the showrunners did, I think, personally listen, and they do give the characters the ability to process their trauma in a really, really real way. So after Sansa's raped, she has these cringy scenes where she's having to comfort the person who saw it happen instead of actually having to process it herself. And then you, in season six, you get her actually saying, like, I still feel him on me. Like that, like when you suffer abuse, it's something that is always with you. And so to actually see her expressing this and talking about it, but still being detached from it, like it was a real way to show how somebody processes a traumatic event. So although I don't think it makes up like for the fact that they handled her and, you know, that trauma badly, I think it does do justice to the character and her story arc to actually build her out as being more than that and having actually processed it, because they showed the character that she was comforting process it first, which I guess was my problem.
Yeah. I think that just goes to like the way they do the storytelling in the show. Like everyone feels like the scenes differently. Like, I personally don't think that scene is nearly as bad as Cersei and Jamie.
No, that one's a lot worse.
I think that one's a lot worse. And that one is specifically on the showrunner's fault, because that scene is not like that in the books.
It's not. It's not at all.
That's definitely on the showrunners for sure.
Yeah.
And not necessarily so much like the story. Like that's them embellishing it for the reasons that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I had a question here. So you basically, I guess for Kate, because you said you don't like that they use a lot of sexual violence, I guess, towards women and take the easy way out or muddied it. I guess one, what other ways did you want to show? And then two, since it happens, as was already pointed out, all across both genders or sexes, I mean, why is it so much, you just spoke of the women more than, I guess, the men saying this all happens when...
I think one, because I am a woman.
Well, obviously.
That's kind of the first thing. But two, the reason, so like when it happens to, when it's against a guy, it's usually just happening to the guy for the guy. Like it is his own thing. It is his own story. It is affecting him. So like Theon, that is him. That is happening to him. He's not having to go and counsel other people, and it's not pushing other people along. That is his story. Now with women in the show, when it's happened before, it's been done to push along somebody else's story. So like in that rape case, in that issue, it was used to propel Theon's story and go deeper into it, and have him process this really hard relationship he has with that house. And for me, that's a problem, because then you're having a character, and it's a problem with anything. Like if you're having a character who goes through an experience and it's being used as a prop, as opposed to developing that character, and she's one of the main characters as something.
I guess I'm wondering, because you just said that was part of developing the other character, the first character you talked about, story. And then you said it was a prop. So I guess I was confused.
Well, so I'm just going to go into the damn scene. So she's raped by her husband, who she was essentially sold to.
Right.
And in the corner is Theon watching, who has been tortured, and their relationship is that she thinks that he killed her her brothers, because he was raised in House Stark, even though he's not of their family. And the guy who is raping her has removed, you know, has castrated him.
Just mentally tortured the hell out of him.
He made him feel like he was a dog. It was an entire storyline. His name is no longer Theon. It's Reek. Yeah. Like he makes him quiver and fear anything of doing wrong. And that entire scene isn't to punish Sansa, isn't for Sansa to do anything more than to make Theon see what's happening and make Theon realize what he's done within this larger thing. So in that case, it's not done for Sansa until season six. Then they deal with it, how it relates to her and her character. But in season five, it's all circled around Theon's character. So she is a prop in that setting, as opposed to it actually being a development of her. Because in the following scene, she has to comfort him, like, I'm so sorry you saw this happen, and like have him process his stuff, and then have trying to get him to help her. And then instead of actually it being focused on her and how that affected her.
Yeah,
so she's being used as a piece in somebody else's story.
Yeah, and I also think it's just the way different people see it. Because I didn't see it like that. I just see it as Sansa's always been reserved in her feelings, and she's not going to... She's Cersei. Like, she's not going to go cry about it until she gets, like, in a corner by herself. And at that time, there's really no one for her to, you know, cry to.
But that's because, like, we've seen other characters by themselves process their stuff.
Yeah, but it's Sansa. She's not the most redeemable character in the show, in my opinion.
I think she is. But no, but and then you have, like, You have Cersei. So Cersei gets handled in two different ways.
So you have a problem with the sexual violence towards the women in the show?
No, just the sexual violence being used in general. Like, okay. I have a problem with sexual violence being used as a trope to push along a story because it's the it's an easy way to make people complicated.
Yeah. I also think it's medieval times. Like, yeah, no, there's not like a whole lot of things that you're going to take away from someone other than, like, body stuff. There's really not much else.
Well, I mean, like, I think that, like, they do a really good job at torturing people other than their body stuff. And a lot of it has to do with familial relations, which is where you get into the child death and stuff like that. Like, there are ways to remove somebody's power without doing that. Now, like, I'm not saying all of it was not warranted or didn't help move the story along. I think Cersei's rape was, that did not need to be there. It did nothing other than the fact that, like, I don't feel like I can like Jaime at all. Like, I don't care, like, how much they've moved past it. Like, it's just, it's hard to like that character with that scene. But, so she has that scene, doesn't do anything. Like, that scene is just as despicable. But when you have her shame scene, that thing was handled really well. And that she is naked, walking through the streets, having people throw literal crap on her. But in that entire part where they're shaming her for her sexuality, they're calling her a sinner because of fornication, because she slept with her brother. She handles that, and you see her process it from step one until she's in the keep and being carried away to have her wounds attended to. And so, like, that was a scene where it was handled really well. So, like, I don't, like, I have a problem with it when it's used excessively and without, like, when it's just thrown in to make some, like, the easy way to make something complicated. This trope happens with women a lot. There are just certain ways to handle it. I don't think Game of Thrones does it. They don't do it as bad as other things, but there are some pieces where I do like to be critical about it. Because I don't have a problem with the body stuff. Like, that's obviously going to happen. It is medieval times, but it's like, yeah, there are different avenues that the show has shown us. Like, you can't, like, you can take away somebody's dignity in a many number of ways and hurt them in many number of ways. I mean, and we've seen that done with many characters. So
yeah, I just think of the Sansa situation, like, there's really not much else for her. Well, like, no. She doesn't know if any of her family's alive at this point.
Yeah. Well, no, like,
so she can't, like, get her family taken away. All she has there is Theon.
Yeah.
And she knows. But I don't want to spend too much time on that, because then we're going to talk all the whole time about that one scene. And there's a lot more I want to talk about. Okay. So with all that being said, like, in that little, you know, side conversation there, like, you can tell that there is development. And I think the series, like, this very, very serious serialization of this show is, like, some that I've never seen before. Like, you have things in season one showing up now in season seven. And, you know, the ramifications of what someone said or something, like a retreading of, like, a father saying or a daughter saying something that her father said, you know, season one still makes sense today in season seven. I think a lot of that has to do with what Kate was saying earlier, that it's kind of like it really is an overarching story that makes serialization good. Like what makes good serialization is having stuff from the beginning matter to the end. And I think Game of Thrones is a really, really good way of doing that and not making it like so overt, like, oh, ha ha ha, this is what happened in season one. Like, a lot of it is really, really subtle. And if you're not paying attention, you might miss it. But if you do pay attention and you do see it, it does bring more to that episode. And there's deaths in the show aren't senseless deaths. Like Kate was saying earlier, like, if someone kills somebody or if someone dies or someone kills themselves, it's for a reason. Like, there are stuff that builds up to those things, and they do have ramifications in the show. And on top of that, you have really, really great world building. And again, you know, this is the world that George R.R. Martin built himself, but they bring it to life in things like the costumings, the way that they do the attitudes of these different people throughout the show builds this world in such a way that if you see a character dress a certain way, well, you automatically know, like, oh yeah, they're from Dorne. They're not from the Seven Kingdoms. Or if you see a character dressed in, you know, rags and stuff, you know that they're a poor person and things like that. And the scenery in the show is also great. Like, they've done a really great job of filming this show all over the world to give you different just aspects of this huge world. So you have Westeros and Essos, and they're completely different when you look at them from scene to scene. And you get that just from, you know, them spending 2 weeks in one area for one battle, like in like Norway or wherever they did it. So that the world building in the show is great. Like, it's so big and so vast and so intricate that David Paterson brought two full languages to life in this show, Valyrian and Dothraki. Like, if you want to go learn either of those languages from the show, you can go do it. That is super, super cool. And the way that the actors, like, actually study and, like, do these voices and stuff, it sounds authentic. Like, it sounds like...
They sound fluent.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like it's broken or hard. Like, yeah. Hard. Like, it sounds genuine.
The funny thing is, I was researching, and they go with, you're talking about all the scenery and everything else. People talking, there's a bunch of articles written and, like, actual, like, I guess, Game of Thrones, like, fanatics. They actually travel to a lot of these sites where these have actually become tourist, like, locations.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt it. I mean, like, you think of, like, people like Harry Potter, like, everyone wants to go, like, to those alleys. Yeah, like, people in Albuquerque go look at all the houses from Breaking Bad. Like, people do that for Game of Thrones, too. And Game of Thrones was filmed, like, all over the world. So it's crazy that there's probably, like, you go buy a tour package, go see all, like, the Game of Thrones scenery places.
I think the really cool thing about the world building that they do, because I know you mentioned the scenery, the costumes, all that stuff, like, a lot of it is nuanced. Like, you won't notice that there are differences in how they're dressing or their hairstyles or all this stuff until you see them a couple of times, and then you realize, oh wait, Sansa's hair is now completely different because she's been in King's Landing for like a month or two. Exactly. And so, like, you get to see these small things that differentiate, and it feels like an actual place that's connected through, like, there's a culture that's built. Like, it's not just the language. I mean, obviously the languages are a part, but, like, they build entire cultures around these cities and kingdoms that are very unique. And the way they interact with each other is amazing.
Go for it, Matt.
I'll say, cause cool. Cause seeing that you have all these different cultures and perspectives, you kind of see. And so I guess as you live in real life, you can see your perspective and you can kind of go visit it. But from a TV series, you can now see the actual interactions between everybody else's actual, I guess, world or view.
Yeah. Like, easiest way I can, like, think about it and I explain it, or the way that I can think about it, is like how Star Trek builds their civilizations and their races and things like that. Like, it's tantamount to that. Like, it's huge and everybody's different and you can see yourself in basically every culture that's around in this place. And there's a lot of them. Like, there's different, there's seven kingdoms, three continents, basically. Like, it's huge, but you can still see yourself and everyone. And that's just because they built the world so well. And for me, world building is, like, a huge thing, like world building in comic book movies, world building in, like, a movie like John Wick. Like, it takes a lot to do it. And if you can do it well, it gets great payoff, at least in my eyes.
Yeah. I was going to say, out of all the world building movies, you go with John Wick. Couldn't go with, like, even another medieval, like Lord of the Rings.
No, I say John Wick because, like, they take this totally obscure world and you want to know more about it, like, without really saying anything. Like, that's world building, even if it's not completely overt and crazy. Like, it's good world building.
And I think the way they do it subtly, like I said, nuance is really important too, because you get to see it with, like, these tales of kings. So, like, the tale of Robert Baratheon is not the same in every place. Like, Stark children, because they're just spread all over in Westeros and Essos, when they see their family story being told, it's never the same in any of the places. And you get to see that a lot. So it's really great to see that, like, they live in a world with people, and these are how these people interpret them. Like, they don't live as isolated individuals. They actually are connected to the culture that they're around.
Yeah, because that's how it would be, like, medieval times. Like, there's no YouTube, no one's showing this stuff on YouTube.
Cultures, man, everything spread through storytelling and bards.
That's basically it.
So, we're talking about spreading cultures. I know you've been wanting to talk about the religion stuff. So, can you tell us about it?
Yeah. So, the religion, a lot of the religion stuff that I really like is the fact that you have the old gods, the seven, the many-faced god, the Lord of Light, the drowned god, the great stallion. And essentially, the reason there are so many gods is because every place has their own god or different interpretations of somebody else's god. There are some shows where they just pretty much read you the playbook. They tell you about it all. This show actually shows you the different parts of these faiths through ritual, which is one of my favorite things, because my style of research was in anthropology. So my whole thing is, like, I want to know what people do. And what people do is going to tell me about what they believe, and that will tell me about the tenets of their faith. And so you get to see a lot of, you see sacrifices, you see eating hearts, like you get to see how this happens, not just on the surface level, but how people actually live through it or push against it. And I think for me, that is something that has been a common thread. And like I said, like throughout this last half of the series, because like Adrian said, like the religion and the magic and stuff, that doesn't come in right away. As things start getting worse for everybody, you see religion starting to come up a lot more. You see street preachers for the Lord of Light. You see all these things happening, and it's filling this vacuum that's being caused by kings dying and people starving and bays getting lit on fire.
Yeah.
It's happening because people need it. And the way that they've worked religion into the show shows that, and how people interact with it. It's more than just, we're going to make religion for the show and that's it. It's these religions have a long timeline and these religions have a long history, and we're not just going to tell you, we're going to show you.
Yeah. And you don't know what's right.
Yeah, no, you don't.
Because like there's aspects of all of these religions, and sometimes stuff comes true in like all of these religions.
All of them.
Like many faced God, like that dude's probably legit. Like the Lord of Light is definitely legit because people are literally coming back to light, and it's because the Lord of Light wants them to. The Great Stallion, like there's it goes back to like the world building, but like there are lots of religions in the show, and a lot of it's regional, really. Like you don't get people The people in the north care more about the old gods than the people in the south do. You know, people in Essos care more about the Lord of Light and stuff like that. So it's definitely
Drowned on in the Iron Islands. Like,
yeah, it's how religion is in the world now. Like, it's definitely a regional thing, and no one knows who's right.
Yeah, because like honestly, if you were to put Christians down from even just the corners of the United States, chances are they may believe like the main thing, but they probably have different ways of interpreting it. They probably have different things that they think people should live by. And it's like that with every religion. Like religions aren't just one thing. It's how people live it. And a lot of the times that's a whole bunch of different denominations and a whole bunch of different sects. And that's important.
It could have easily been like at the beginning of the show, you really don't get too many of the religions that you have like now, like say season 7, you really just say have people saying, oh, well, the old gods and the new, with the new being like the 7 and stuff. And you think, that's just the 7 is just what people think now and not what they thought earlier. Like, medieval times versus like now, or like ancient Greece versus like Christianity now and stuff. But it really isn't like that. Like, it's just people see these things actually happen in their cultures and they just stick with those religions. I think Lord of Light, I think, is the most relevant, and I think that's the right one.
Stuff
in the Lord of Light happens, and all that stuff's coming true, and it's just really,
I think the many faced God's the right one.
I think they're just really good assassins. I think is all that is.
But I think too, like the last thing to say about this is they pretty much have this entire Inquisition arc in the 6th season, which is really awesome to watch as somebody who like has studied like that era of really, it's really bad. And the show does that really badness justice for the most part. And there are, like I said, Meisters, and like they take the bones of what a religious studies person would know and then build religions on top of them.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about a lot. Do you have any questions, Matt? I think we've hit basically everything, like at least in my like brief summation of what we've covered. Like, it has elements of it's not just a medieval times not just a medieval times show. It's a little bit of this, it's a little bit of that, and it's done well. You have the realism of like, you can see this stuff happening in your own life. You have great storytelling and some of the best characters in terms of arcs, developments, hating people so much that you hate the actual person in real life because they acted so well. Like, that's insane. And then of course this, the vast world that they're able to bring to life, I think, is just insane.
As far as the actual show goes, I think there's definitely a lot of elements. I can definitely see why it is the popular, or one of the most popular shows on TV. And definitely, I guess if you said sprung other TV shows, I'm interested now to watch it. I mean, I can't guarantee it, but it's definitely something more intrigued.
We got HBO for a month, so.
I mean, I definitely sit here and listen to you guys talk about it and be.
Yeah, and this is definitely one of those things, like, where we just talked about, like, the main characters. Like, there are so many characters in the show that we did not talk about.
Yeah, Marmont, come on.
Like, And the kid actors in the show are actually, except they're for Bran. Really I hate Bran. Lady Mormont is like the coolest girl ever, and she should just run the show. It's awesome. Like, the characters in the show are great, and there's a lot that we didn't mention, Matt. But, like, I know when we talked about, you know, some of our previous episodes, like, you like characters that you can relate to. I guarantee you that there are characters in the show, yeah, even if they're not, like, the main characters, that you'll gravitate to and like just because of who they are.
I do want to point out to you, because I know I did talk about, like, some of the bad stuff that happens to women in the show. Women are also freaking awesome in this show, too. Like, it's not just, like, that. Like, one of the reasons I really love it is you have, like, Lyanna Mormont. You have Yara Greyjoy, who is fighting to own her own kingdom. Like, you have, like, these arcs being built for women to actually take over.
And the front runner of the show has three dragons and, like, is relieving slaves. Like, this show has definitely taken a different turn and, like, arc in terms of, like,
who... Yes.
Because I would say, like, even at the beginning of the show, like, the women in the show aren't weak. Like,
No.
Catelyn Stark has been strong.
No, Catelyn Stark was really strong, and she was amazing, but it was a different type of strong.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, the transition and the development could have been, like, very, like, hammered and very, you know, like, kind of over the head with it. But they've done it so well over seven and a half seasons now that, like, you believe it. Like, you know that Arya is badass. Like, you know that Daenerys isn't that 13-year-old girl in the books that she was in season one. So,
And I think, too, I agree there. One of the really great things that I like about it is there are different types of women and there are different types of men. Like, there are different, like, you have men who are cowards, you have men who are brave, you have men who want to be scholars, and you have men who want to fight. You have women who want to lead, you have women who are feminine, you have women who beat the crap out of people like Brienne. Like, it's not just cookie cutter, and it's not just this is the ideal character. It's these are the different explanations of how people can be. You can like them for a multitude of reasons. You see them interact with each other, and they actually deal with the tension of what happens, like, when a guy wants to be a scholar instead of a fighter, you know.
And this happens, like, between families, right? Like, the family dynamics in this show are crazy. Like, there's no perfect families in this show. I would say the Starks are pretty, like, traditional values of, like, you know, families, everything, except for Sansa. They're all pretty straightforward of, like, hey. Yeah, and she basically, like, killed her whole family. But, you know, you have those family dynamics in the show, too, that are just wide-ranging. And, like, you know that not everybody loves everybody in their families and the ramifications of that.
Illegitimate children.
Yeah. All dwarves are bastards in their father's eyes.
One other question. Since we talked about you guys talk and you've been raving about all the great characters and all the great stuff, how many of these actual actors became A-listers or become now actual branched off from the show into bigger movies?
Some of them branched in. Actually,
Emilia Clarke, I guess, is like a. I mean, this was like Emilia Clarke's, who's Daenerys Targaryen. This was her first role, like, out of college or whatever. She tried to do Terminator. I don't think she was that great in Terminator. Like, I can't think of anybody in the show who who's become like big A-list and who are like in movies that you can go see like this weekend.
Aquaman's in there.
I know there's a lot of times where
new shows have come out and people go, oh, it's a character from Game of Thrones. Oh, it's a character from Game of Thrones.
Finn Jones, who is just as bad in Game of Thrones as he is in Iron Fist, if you need to know.
You hear a lot about, like, oh, they're now referenced to, like, these actors played in Game of Thrones and now they're in here versus they were in here and they came in.
I think it's early. Yeah. I think is the best way to say it. Like,
because the show hasn't capped yet.
Yeah, the show hasn't capped yet and they spend a lot of time doing the show. Like, I think the biggest actor I can think of who's been in the show is Sean Bean, but he kind of dies like in every movie, like anything he's in ever. Yes and no is going to be my answer there. All right, so we're going to go into some quick fan, but why those? Because we love hearing from our listeners and people who generally care about these shows. So we have a few from some of my friends in real life, and here's what they had to say. So this first one is from John Murphy. His favorite house is the Lannister house. And he says, to totally not to be contrarian, but what is the name of the show? The Game of Thrones. They play the game better than anyone, particularly when Tywin was alive or when Tyrion was Hand. They are cunning and totally shouldn't be ever be counted out. I'm not saying that they are good guys or the ones who should win, but they are the family that knows what they are doing. The only ways that they lose is when the writers want to please the audience. Yeah, and I think that's really great. And I won't talk too much about, like, each comment, but, like, I think that's really great because the Lannisters typically, like, if you look at like good versus bad, they're not the good guys, but they're just written so well that you can appreciate the fierceness and the badassery that they do, even if they're just kind of like jerks 95% of the time. This next one is from Derek Snyder. His favorite character is a tie between Daenerys Targaryen and Arya Stark. Very good choices. Favorite House Stark. Hate the most. Tie between Cersei and Ramsay Bolton. He also says low-key kind of loves Cersei at the same time, so it's confusing, which I think is totally valid. Like I said at the very beginning, people hate Cersei, people love Cersei, so if you like her, even though you're maybe not supposed to, like, it's okay. And his choice for the throne is either going to be Jon or Daenerys. And I won't see this next part because it's kind of a spoiler and I don't want to ruin that part. But those are basically my top two picks, who's going to take the throne as well. And the reasons why he loves the show is he says it's absolutely ruthless and unpredictable. It really sucks you in for having so many stories going at once. It does an amazing job of tying them all together and really bringing the things full circle. Hands down, one of the best shows I've ever watched. This is great because Derek is actually one of my oldest friends and was actually my roommate in Austin. I don't know if you guys ever got to meet him when we came over to play. Yeah. He had never watched Game of Thrones, except for like a couple months ago. So he's all in and just binged all six seasons and I guess seven and a half now. So he's all in for it. This next one, Anthony DeLeon, favorite character, one of Kate's favorite characters, Lady Mormont, and Sam, who's a smaller character, but I can totally get behind Sam. Favorite House Stark, his most hated character is Littlefinger.
Oh, I get behind that 100%.
No argument there. Littlefinger is a creep. Taking the throne, he thinks it's going to be Jon. He doesn't want it, and I think that's what makes him the best option. It would be also fitting since we assume that Sam is one of the ones who record this history. That's a great theory that's going out. That's all of this stuff that's going on in the show is actually being recorded by a maester. I think it's a great, great theory, and I can definitely get behind that.
That is a really good theory.
And why he loves the show. The show is incredibly and intentionally detailed. I can go back to season one and find foreshadowing that comes out in season six. It's also amazing the level of detail that has gone into developing a history that is not portrayed in the show, even much earlier than Robert's Rebellion. It's an incredible analysis of the struggle for power and ethical leadership of At All Possible. You can analyze it philosophically, psychologically, etc. It's the best show I've ever seen. I think a lot of that, his like little summary there is basically everything that we've said.
Yeah.
Over the course of like this like hour and 10.
So we could have just read that comment and been done.
Yeah, so we could have just read your comment, Anthony, and been done. And this next one is from Tristan Jones. His favorite character is Jon Snow and Varys. I've never heard anyone say Varys is their favorite character, so this is very new to me, and I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Season 7 interaction with...
probably, yeah.
Like I can go for Varys.
Yeah, favorite House Stark... Hate the most. I'm not sure that I hate anybody anymore. Kind of hated Larius, but not that strongly, which I guess is okay because I don't think at this point right now in the show that there's anyone that you could like overtly hate.
Yeah.
Right now, except for Cersei. I hate Cersei and I kind of semi hate Sansa, but like they're not like Joffrey or Ramsay Bolton bad. What I love about the show is how much it expands on the ironies of power, desire, honor, revenge, etc. It also shows how silly, petty, familial squabbles are to the ultimate larger picture of world building. Every single character is dynamic and complex, except the mountain. And the scope of George's fictional universe is mind-blowing, not even counting the books. And then I think we have some stuff from Twitter. Yeah, Kate?
I have some Twitter stuff. So the first one is from from Angel of the Color Me Dead podcast. And Angel says, the reason I love GOT... Awesome battle scenes, amazing characters, empowering female leads, amazing acting, effing dragons, sold. Also because J.R.R. Martin is amazing. The imagination, each character, no matter how small, is complex and interesting in its own way. Also, trying to condense 7 years worth of love for GOT into 140 characters. It's fucking bullshit, man. and then we also have one from Amanda on Twitter as well. So I'm very far behind, but it's the friggin' badass female leads for one thing and making fantasy cool again. But I'm also very far behind. So, I mean, yeah. And then we also had a nice little Twitter poll where I realized that like there are just so many options for why Game of Thrones matters. But the cool thing was it was the four answers were fantasy done right, female characters, best show on TV, and other. And fantasy done right was 29%, female characters was 21%, other was 14%, and best show on TV was 36%. So best show on TV wins, but they're all pretty close.
It's so wide ranging that, like I said before, and I'll say it again, like there's something for everybody in this show, and I think that poll really speaks to that, as well as our fan. But why those? I think they echoed a lot of what we said in this show, and they haven't even listened to it yet.
So I guess last thoughts.
Last thoughts for me is this is really, I think, one of the best shows ever. It's definitely the best show, I think, right now on TV, streaming service, pirating, like whatever you want to call it. Like if you need a new show to watch, like this is it. And if you're watching it now, you know why you've watched it for all of this time, for a lot of the reasons that we mentioned. Go Jon Snow, Stark for life, the North remembers. The winner is coming.
Winner is here.
Yeah.
Winner doesn't exist in real life.
Well, that's because we're a Texas podcast.
But I'm like, I wish winter was
actually
coming.
How hot was it in El Paso?
I don't even look in the summer. Like, it's hot. Like, that's
supposed to be 104 tomorrow.
For us.
But anyway.
We're not in the desert.
But anyway. No, I see why everybody gets the excitement about it. I see how everybody enjoys it, loves it. I can see getting, I guess, because it's cool listening to you guys talk about it, but even from the fans, like what they said, like how much they seem to really enjoy this, and obviously it's a huge popular hit, and I can see why. I'm listening to everybody. I can't guarantee I will eventually watch it, but I definitely like just listening about it and finding. Maybe I can get somebody on Twitch to go play a video game about it, and then I'll find the entire
story. Is a video game about it. Actually, Telltale did a video game on it.
Yep.
So. Somebody hit that up and play it, and I'll watch you.
If I stream it, will you watch it?
Maybe.
If I stream episodes from my big screen of all the seasons, then will you watch it?
Possibly, because I did watch all the Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Wait, I will say this, though. That would be a great like podcast commentary stream, just each episode.
Oh, my God. Down. Let's do it. I'm all about talking during movies.
That would be so good. It's because you're brown.
Probably, yeah.
So my final thoughts are I'm really glad I went back and watched it. Mostly because I think that this is a show that when it's done is going to have a giant story arc that really tells it. Like, you're going to have to watch them all together to get the full scope of what's happening. And I'm really happy I went back, really happy I binged it. And I wish I was as badass as Lady Mormont when I was her age, because she's awesome. So yeah, to wrap up the show, did want to give a shout out to Justini V. She is a host of the It's About Damn Crime podcast, and she left us an iTunes review, and we love more iTunes reviews, so please rate, review, and subscribe. And her iTunes review is, I gave this podcast a listen because Kate is so incredibly sweet, and I just wanted to support her, but it turns out this podcast is just good. The rapport you guys all have with each other is fun to listen to, and this podcast is just plain old interesting, in all caps. Keep up the good work, and I'll keep coming back. Justine. So thanks, Justine. We appreciate it.
Yay.
Everybody else, let us know what you think. We want feedback.
Yeah, come back and talk to us every... If you need someone to talk about the episode with for the rest of the season, come find us on Facebook or Twitter, and we'll come talk to you about it.
Yep, we'll put it out there. So yeah, as always, you can find us at But Why Though PC on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can find me at Oh My Myth Randir on Instagram and Twitter. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SuperReuiz93. And I'm sure there's stuff I got wrong here. I mean, like I said, like I know much bigger Game of Thrones fans than myself. So if I got anything wrong, or if you want to talk about anything at me, just come at me. It's all come at me, bro. Come at me.
And Matt, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at datm18, DATTM18. And by the way, since they have a fun thing, people watching Game of Thrones start throwing in Lord of the Rings references and they get confused sometimes because they're not paying attention.
So there's that Battle of the Bastards thing where they're going, who owns the North? We do. And he's like, you're not orcs. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? They're saying the North. He was like, he face palmed and was like, oh crap, you're talking about Lord of the Rings. I'm so sorry. And then just walked away and wanted to take away my Twitter handle.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.